Today's broadcast was originally recorded on June 5th, 2025.
You voted to cut the price of eggs, not for a $50,000 bill your family can't pay. You voted to cut the price of gas, not to have mom or dad thrown out of nursing home care. You voted for a stronger economy, not to close over 300 hospitals in farm states. But Congress voted to put the burden on you, to put your family and your finances at risk, to put seniors out in the streets. It's no exaggeration. The MAGA murder budget is going to kill people. Millions will lose care they can't afford any other way. People with diabetes, kidney disease, cancer, Alzheimer's, $800 billion in Medicaid cuts to pay for a tax cut for Elon Musk. It's not about Republicans or Democrats now. It's about right and wrong. Tell your senator, this is wrong.
Oh, man. The MAGA murder budget.
Oh, man. Well, I don't know why I came here tonight.
That's why.
I got the feeling that something ain't right.
No, it ain't.
I'm so scared in case I fall off my chair.
That was Republicans,
and
by the
I'm
way.
I'm wondering how I'll get down the stairs.
Man.
Clowns to the left of me. Jokers to the right. Here I am, stuck in the middle with you.
I am. From Pacifica Radio in Los Angeles, this is The Bradcast. As heard on KPFK, 90.7 FM in LA, also in California in Red Bluff and Ready on KFOI and Round Mountains, KKRN. Up in Oregon on the Central Coast on KYAQ, Cottage Grove's Queso and Eugene's KEPW. Lanchester, Pennsylvania's W News, Maui, Hawaii's KAKU. In Columbus, Ohio on WGRN, Palinville, New York's WLPP. Rochester, New York's WRFZ, down in New Orleans on WHIV, out in Gallup, New Mexico on KNIZ, Concord, New Hampshire's WNHN, Fayetteville, Arkansas's KPSQ, in Seattle on KODX, Richmond, Virginia's WRWK, Fairmont, West Virginia's WEFR, Janesville, Wisconsin's WADR, and Minneapolis, St. Paul's AM 950, KTNF. We also stream coast to coast and around the globe every day on the internet. So on the Progressive Voices Channel, Netroots Radio, Radio for Humans, NicoleSandler.com, Radio Free Brooklyn, No Lies Radio, Detour Talk, Delmarva FM, and most of your favorite podcast sites. Blanketing Planet Earth, I'm Brad Friedman, your friendly investigative blogger, journalist, troublemaker, muckraker, and all-around swell fellow, says me from bradblog.com. Thank you very much for joining us today. Delighted to have you here with us. And Desi Doyen, that was the Lincoln Project at the top of the of the show there. Those are former Republicans.
Never Trumpers.
Never Trumpers. But boy, imagine if Democrats played hardball that way with, they ought to take a few, I've been saying for years, they ought to take some lessons from those Lincoln Project Republicans.
Yes, who are using their evil powers that they used in the past for good for once.
The MAGA murder budget. We will get to some of that in a little bit. We got a lot to get to, or try to get to today. Some Supreme Court rulings, as always, some dumb, dangerous stuff that Donald Trump is both doing and saying, which, as usual, we reserve the right to not waste your time with, unless otherwise warranted. We will see as we try. We don't always succeed, but we try to stay focused on stuff that actually matters. So we'll see where we can get to today. Oh, including, by the way, our latest Green News report,
yep,
which always matters and which we almost always get to. Hi, Desiree.
Hi.
But of course, the other thing that always matters on this program, democracy and elections, as I strongly believe in both and see them as corrupted as our electoral system has become in many ways. I still see them both as still the best way out of this entire fine mess. And to that end, well, there were some elections this week on Tuesday, which, frankly, I owe you an apology. Somehow I kind of lost track of covering them yesterday. So we've been trying to keep up with so much. So allow me to sort of make up for that oversight today, especially since it includes some seemingly very good news for at least the forces opposed to the attempted fascist takeover of these United States. As Newsweek described it yesterday, Democrats achieved a landslide win in South Carolina on Tuesday. Democrat Keyshawn Scott defeated his Republican rival, Bill Oldham, in a landslide win for a seat in the South Carolina House of Representatives. Scott, who is 24 years old, go Keyshawn.
That's adorable.
And a member already of the Bishopville City Council, secured, wait for it, over 70% of the vote.
Wow.
More than 70% of more than 3,600 votes that were cast in Tuesday's special election to fill this vacant seat. The Republican, Oden, is a former chair of the Sumter County GOP. He took just over 29% of the vote, according to unofficial results from the state's election commission. From Newsweek's coverage over to Emily Singer at Daily Coast today, Democrats on Tuesday won a special election for a state House seat in South Carolina by an eye-popping margin, signaling yet again, according to Singer, that the 2026 midterms could be a very good year for the Democratic Party. Well, all signs certainly suggest as much, all electoral signs in any event. History suggests as much. The out party almost always takes back seats in the first mid-year elections after the election of a new president, midterm elections, I should say. And the numbers, both here on Tuesday night and in previous special elections, since last year, since last November's presidential, seemed to strongly suggest as much, that this could be a good year coming up for Democrats, not to mention that prediction from our friend Driftglass a week or two ago. He's proven to know a lot of stuff about a lot of stuff over his 20-plus years on the political beat. He told us last time he was on the show with Digby that he believed Democrats might flip as many as 40 seats in the U.S. House in next year's midterms. Well, we will see if he's right about that. But yes, eye-popping landslide results out of places like South Carolina in special elections would seem to indicate that the energy, at least, is with the Democrats as we head toward a midterm election, even if it's still very early. And even as Dems continue to waste their time with a whole lot of internecine nonsense and the corporate media try to exacerbate that with a pretend scandal about the former president being older than previously known, and many in both party leadership and the media sort of navel-gazing about numbers suggesting, probably correctly, that support for the Democratic Party in general, for party leadership itself, is at one of the lowest points in decades. I believe that. Though I'm not sure it has all that much effect on actual elections when the rubber meets the road, at least as we saw on Tuesday night in South Carolina and in other similar elections over the past several months. But we will see. On Tuesday, 24-year-old, as noted, Keyshawn Scott defeated Republican William Oden in the special election for South Carolina's 50th state House district by a whopping 70.6% to 29.3%, essentially a 41 percentage point victory. 41 points. Now, it's true that this was and is a blue district. Nonetheless, Vice President Kamala Harris won that same district last year by just 5 points.
Wow. So he improved greatly.
Greatly.
That.
Yes. And, you know, I mean, I'm not Secretary of Education Linda McMahon, but I'm still pretty sure that 41 points is, in fact, much higher than 5 points. As Emily Singer notes over at Daily Coast, that marks the second biggest shift towards Democrats in any special election that has been held since last November. And there have been a lot of such swings. The results, according to analysis from the election site called The Down Ballot, means that Democrats in special elections since last year have now overperformed Harris's results in those districts, which have held special elections since last year, by 16.4 points, 16 and a half points. Of course, as noted, the out party almost always does well, of course, in midterms and special elections in the first year or two after a new president. They often overperform, like the Democrats did on Tuesday. But for context, after Donald Trump's first election, when Democrats eventually would go on to take back control of the U.S. House for the first time in nearly a decade in the 2018 midterm cycles, well, the average at that point of how they were outperforming from the presidential race was just 10.6 points.
So Democrats are improving on their own overall performance over the 2017-2018 election.
2018 midterms when they did really, really well, when they took back the House. At that point, they overperformed by about 10.5 points. Now they're overperforming by 16.5 points. In advance of the 2020, what year is this? 2026 midterm elections. So, you know, I will say, looking at Down Ballot's list of all of the special elections around the country since last November, looks like there's about, I don't know, about 25 or 30 of them for both state and congressional seats. The swing for Democrats from last year's presidential election results have, by and large, if not in general, if not always, but they have been growing larger and larger and larger overall since the first special elections in Virginia in the first part of first week of January, right on up through this week in South Carolina. Their numbers seem to be getting bigger, that swing from where they were last year to where they are now. So if Dems are unpopular, as the media and pollsters keep telling us over and over again, well, it does not seem to be reflected in actual election results, at least so far, and at least this year.
That's very cool. Now, I want to point out one quick thing. Daniel Nishanian of Bolts Magazine, he says that there are dozens of elections that are local, state, and county that are coming up over the next year and a half. So he suggests people pay attention. Bolts has a comprehensive list, and he also warned that there are a lot of these races, state, local, and county, that that Republicans do not have any Democratic challengers. They have no challengers. They're running unopposed. So it's a great time to, now is the best time.
Which is a Shonda right
there. Yes, it's now a great time to look up your own local area to find out what's going on there for your people, and make sure that there's a challenger in every race.
Not only vote for something, run for something.
Yeah,
there's
or help
an idea.
Somebody else run for something.
As Emily Singer notes over at Daily Coast, history shows that special election results are a good indicator of what the political environment will look like in an upcoming election. And by the way, we've got there's a lot of, you know, small local elections around the country. There's also the election for the state house in Virginia coming up.
Yeah.
There's gubernatorial races in places like New Jersey this year. So Democrats flipped state Senate seats in over the past few months in Iowa. They flipped these seats in Iowa, in Pennsylvania, where Donald Trump won last year. Districts where Donald Trump won last year, Democrats have been able to flip them. You'll also recall that in April, voters in the Wisconsin Supreme Court race delivered a huge blow to Donald Trump and Elon Musk, who had poured millions into backing the Republican candidate in that contest. And a recent Democratic performance in New York for a state Senate seat was so strong that essentially, as Singer reminds us, Trump pulled New York Congresswoman Elise Stefanik's nomination to serve as U.S. ambassador to the United Nations, fearing that the GOP could lose her seat in a special election. And with margins this close, he's having enough trouble getting his agenda passed at all. He couldn't afford to lose her. This was a seat Stefanik is in a seat that Trump carried by nearly 21 points last year, and yet he was afraid that Republicans could not hold on to that. Well, for good reason. Looking at the list of the special elections over the past several months, just in May, late May, in New York State Senate District 22, there was a 90-point swing from the Republicans to the Democrats. 90 points. A Democrat flipped a seat where Trump had won by 55 points last November, flipped that seat on May 20 by 35 points, a 90-point swing from red to blue. The highest by far that we have seen this year as far as swings go, including higher than Tuesday's landslide victory for Democrats, where the results swung only 36 points towards Democrats in that district since last year's presidential election. In an endorsement video posted to Keyshawn Scott's Facebook, U.S. Congressman Jim Clyburn underscored the importance of the election on Tuesday. He called it a must-win for Democrats. He said it would be the beginning of a Democratic comeback here in South Carolina. Well, we will see about that. He said, quote, irrespective of where you live, how old you may be, whatever gender you may be, this is about the future of Democrats in South Carolina. He said in his endorsement, South Carolina's House Minority Leader Todd Rutherford said the win showed the power of strong grassroots campaigning and would help set the tone for the 2026 elections. The Democratic National Committee called Scott's win an extension of the party's, quote, overperformance streak. That part is true. The DNC chair, Ken Martin, said in a statement, quote, as long as Trump and MAGA Republicans peddle an out-of-touch agenda that puts billionaires' interests first and takes away health care from millions of Americans, they will continue to sink and lose. We will see if he, that's DNC chair Ken Martin, we will see if he is right about that. But so far, signs remain positive for Democrats moving forward, at least when it comes to elections. And as Ken Martin notes, this Trump MAGA agenda of, yeah, in fact, putting billionaires first and taking away health care from Americans, all while increasing the deficit that Republicans pretend to be against doing whenever a Democrat is in the White House, I don't know how well all of that is going to go over. So as to that, what he described as out-of-touch agenda that puts billionaires' interests first and takes away health care for millions of Americans, he was right. He's referring to Trump and congressional Republicans' so-called One Beautiful Bill, which the nonpartisan Congressional Budget Office on Wednesday determined would cut almost $1.5 trillion from health care and food nutrition support for low-income and disabled and elderly men, women, and children. It will strip health care coverage entirely from as many as 14 million. It will kill thousands of Americans in the bargain, all while increasing the federal government's budget deficit by nearly $3 trillion in order to pay for some $4 trillion in tax cuts to millionaires, billionaires, and big corporations. What are these people thinking? So, yes, that bill. That Republican bill that, for now, after passing it in the House, Republicans are still hoping to push through the Senate, and they're hoping to get all of this done by July 4, even though their new hero, because he's the richest man in the world, Elon Musk, called the bill this past week a, quote, disgusting abomination, and told his followers on his social media site on, I think, Wednesday, to, quote, kill the bill. Yes, that bill that Republicans, at least for the moment, still seem to want to pass because they don't really have any other ideas.
You mean the MAGA murder bill?
The MAGA murder bill, that one. That's right. As but they've got no other ideas because Trump has wrapped up his entire agenda into this one single, this one big, beautiful bill, as he likes to call it. Well, some thoughts on that bill today that I want to get to not from the Lincoln Project Republicans that you heard at the top, but from some other people that might be surprising to hear their opinions on that bill. But to get there, I got to get there through the Supreme Court, believe it or not. As we noted earlier this week, it's decision month for the corrupted high court, with more than 30 major opinions set to be handed down before the court breaks for the summer. At the end of this month, we got a bit of a preview of some of the expected decisions earlier this week with Law Dork's Chris Geidner, who highlighted a number of the so-called religious freedom cases that the court has taken up this year. A decision in one of them was handed down on Thursday, though it was a pretty easy one, it seems to me. The Supreme Court unanimously ruled on Thursday that a Catholic charity in Wisconsin was entitled to a tax exemption that had been denied by a state court on the ground that its activities were not primarily religious. Okay. The Wisconsin Supreme Court had ruled, apparently, that the group's activities were, quote, primarily charitable and secular, and that it therefore did not, quote, attempt to imbue program participants with the Catholic faith, so it wasn't entitled to the tax exemptions. Indeed, the state court said the group employed and served people of all religions, which, by the way, any good religion should.
Yes.
But maybe that's just me. I don't know. But what it meant was that the state court found that the group should be denied their tax exemption, even as it accepted the charity's contention that its services were, quote, based on gospel values and the principles of the Catholic social teachings. So it kind of sounds to me like a dumb decision by the Wisconsin Supremes. And we can argue whether churches ought to be tax exempt at all. I'd be happy to make the argument that they should not be.
But that's not the argument
that was
made today.
But that's not the case, yeah. There, you know, was this particular corporation, it was an independent corporation that was running this this charity, but the state supreme said no to the tax exemptions.
You serve all people, so no way.
Yeah, on Thursday they said otherwise. Justice Sonia Sotomayor, writing for the U.S. Supreme Court today, said that the state court had engaged in forbidden, quote, denominational discrimination, unquote. Catholic doctrine, as understood by the charity, she wrote, forbids using charitable work to proselytize and requires service to be open to all. The state court, she wrote, had run afoul of the Constitution by imposing, quote, a denominational preference by differentiating between religions based on theological choices. The case is one of three concerning religion that was heard by the justices this term. And as the New York Times' Adam Liptak notes, it extended a remarkable winning streak at the court for religious people and religious groups, or at least people who claim to be religious. Even though this one was not a particularly contentious one, apparently. It was decided unanimously. How often does that happen these days? Another case about whether parents in Maryland have a religious right to withdraw their children from classes when books with gay and transgender themes are discussed. That will be decided in the coming weeks. We'll see if that is more contentious. And the third case, which we previously covered on the show, a few weeks ago, the justices had deadlocked back in May by a 4-4 vote over whether a Catholic charter school in Oklahoma passed constitutional muster to receive public taxpayer dollars as what would have been the first religious public charter school in the country to do so, opening up a whole new can of worms across the entire country. Well, in that case, the Oklahoma State Supreme Court and its Republican attorney general said, nope, it's a Catholic school, a religious charter school. It should not receive public funding, public tax dollars. The state's Republican and very Trumpy governor, on the other hand, and its very, very Trumpy state school superintendent, well, they argued otherwise. These are all Republicans. They argued otherwise. They made it up to the Supreme Court, and they ended up losing in that 4-4 vote because that tie left the state Supreme Court's ruling in place, even though it did not set a national precedent, as had been feared if the court had actually allowed public taxpayer dollars to go to a religious charter school. The 4-4 tie there at the high court came after Justice Amy Coney Barrett recused herself from the case, honorably so, for a happy change. Apparently she was, because it didn't say why, but it's believed that she was tight with a bunch of folks who were arguing on behalf of the religious school, as I remember. But Thursday's ruling this week from SCOTUS in the Wisconsin case, that was apparently an easy and unanimous one. Catholic Charities Bureau versus Wisconsin Labor and Industry Review Commission. Concerned a state law that exempts religious groups from state unemployment taxes so long as they are, quote, operated primarily for religious purposes. Well, Catholic Charities Bureau, that's the social ministry of the Catholic Diocese in Superior, Wisconsin, said that its that its mission to provide, quote, services to the poor and disadvantaged as an expression of the social ministry of the Catholic Church. That's its mission. But state officials determined that the charity did not qualify for the exemption because, quote, provides essentially secular services and engages in activities that are not religious, per se. When the case was argued in March, a lawyer for the state acknowledged that the charity would qualify for the exemption if it were directly a part of the church rather than a separate corporation. That somehow you get so
that's a technicality.
Yeah. In a concurring opinion, though, the wildly corrupt Justice Clarence Thomas said essentially that courts have no business whatsoever second guessing anything a church decides about anything. When it comes to how they decide to organize themselves, if they make their charity arm a separate corporation or if it's part of the church itself, Clarence Thomas, well, he doesn't, you know, want anybody to say anything about what the churches can or can't do. And for the record, Thomas is a Catholic himself, like 6 of the 9 justices currently on the high court, actually 7 of the justices, if you count Neil Gorsuch, who was raised as Catholic, but now he is said to be, he's said to attend an Episcopal church, which I think is a Protestant church. Am I right about
yes.
that? I don't know. I'm Jewish. I don't follow this crap. Anyway, Eric Rasbach, a lawyer with the Beckett Fund for Religious Liberty, which represents the charity, welcomed the decision. He said, quote, Wisconsin shouldn't have picked this fight in the first place. It's always absurd to claim that Catholic Charities was not religious because it helps everyone, no matter their religion. Okay. So why do I start there to discuss the latest regarding Donald Trump's so-called one big beautiful bill? Well, because for one, I'm happy to see they're all standing behind all of these Catholics, you know. They're all supporting the Catholics at the Supreme Court. They're concerned about their charities and how they serve the people and how we should take good care of them. Well, as you may have noticed, Republicans, they love to pretend to support religious, to support religion, but, you know, they'll support religion as long as it's a Christian one anyway.
And as long as that religion agrees with whatever agenda they're trying to push.
And at least with 6 of the 9 justices on the high court being Catholic, obviously they have an affinity specifically for the Catholic Church and its teachings, right? At least supposedly, right? Well, if that is the case, will Republicans now pay attention when considering whether to pass their so-called one big beautiful bill? Will they pay attention to what Catholics have to say about it, and have to say about it in no uncertain terms. On that, let me take a quick break, and we will come back with what a group of Catholics describe in an editorial as Trump's, quote, one big shameful bell that, yes, has Jesus weeping. That's straight ahead on today's broadcast, plus Desi Doyen's Green News Report and whatever else we can get to. All of that on the broadcast. I'm Brad Friedman. Don't touch that dial.
The broadcast and the Green News Report are 100% independent, 100% listener supported. But we can't do it alone. We need you. Please help us bring real facts to listeners at independent stations around the nation. Please drop by bradblog.com/donate. That's bradblog.com/donate. And thanks.
Hey, this is Brad. You're listening to an encore presentation of the broadcast. Bradblog.com. All right, the National Catholic Reporter, or NCR, is apparently an independent news organization. It covers issues related to the Catholic Church. It was founded way back in 1964. It's based in my old home state of Missouri, Kansas City, Missouri, which is on the other side of the state from St. Louis, which has better barbecue than Kansas City. But don't get me started. That's not really what this segment is about. The NCR operates outside of the authority of the Catholic Church, but is reflective of a big chunk of, you know, Catholic viewpoints in America. The NCR editorial staff rang in with their opinion of the Trump Republican so-called One Big Beautiful Bill. And in case Elon Musk wasn't clear enough about his own opinion when he described that bill as a, quote, disgusting abomination, well, the good Catholics at the NCR seem to be pretty clear about their opinion in their editorial headlined, One Big Shameful Bill. And I think since Republicans pretend to care so much about faith and religious institutions, etc., I'm sure they will be taking a very close look at this editorial, and that therefore it is worth sharing with you at some length. This was shared with me via Blue Sky yesterday, I think, where you can find me there at the Brad Blog, by John Jupin on Blue Sky in reply to my posting of yesterday's show with Dr. Brooke Nichols regarding the hundreds of thousands of men, women, and mostly children who have died due to the Trump and Musk shutdown of the United States Agency for International Development, USAID. So thank you, John, for this. I had not seen it as it came out late last week when we were on the road. But I think this editorial from the National Catholic Reporter is very much worth sharing today, if you haven't heard it. It begins this way. There is nothing beautiful about President Donald Trump's and the Republican House's One Big Beautiful Bill Act. The House of Representatives has passed one of the most immoral pieces of legislation in recent memory, giving this sweeping legislation a sophomoric title does not disguise its ugly nature. In reverse Robin Hood style, they write, the One Big Beautiful Bill Act proposes nearly $4 trillion in tax cuts that benefit the wealthiest among us while cutting $1 trillion in vital support for the most vulnerable, including poor families with children and the elderly. Over the last 40 years, we have witnessed successive waves of tax legislation supposedly aimed at broadening prosperity. However, in practice, they have done little more than widen the gap between the haves and the have-nots. The National Catholic Reporter editorial staff notes Americans were told repeatedly that cutting rates for corporations and top earners would stimulate investment, spur job creation, and raise wages. Instead, wages have stagnated, corporate profits have skyrocketed, and inequality has deepened to levels not seen since the Gilded Age. It is the kind of diabolical lie that only Trump's broligarch cronies could love. Ouch. Now they go on to cite how Ronald Reagan's trickle-down economic theory never actually helped the middle class, actually hurt them, in fact.
And thank
how,
you.
Yeah. And how in the 45 years since Republicans adopted that scam, the share of income going to the top 1% has doubled. And after-tax incomes of the richest 100th of 1% soared by more than 507% from 1979 to 2019. Noting, quote, these were not unintended consequences. They were anticipated, the anticipated result of political choices that sacrificed shared prosperity for the promise of individual gain. Ironically, they continue, Trump's MAGA grift machine, I love these guys, took advantage of these income disparities to propel him into the White House twice. In his first term, Congress enacted a significant overhaul of the U.S. tax code in late 2017. That legislation promised relief for working families and a boost to economic growth. It was another Trumpian canard, as corrupt as Trump University or Trump cryptocurrency. More than half its benefits flowed to the top 1% of taxpayers. That brings us, they write, to the oxymoronic One Big Beautiful Bill Act. It is another fast-rolling disaster, only worse. Trump and House Republicans have passed a legislative package that seeks to permanently embed the most regressive features of the inequitable 2017 tax cut bill into the tax code while introducing a lucrative new payday for the wealthiest Americans. To partially offset the cost of the tax cuts, the bill requires significant reductions that will inflict pain and suffering on the most vulnerable people in the country. Cuts to Medicaid and the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program, or SNAP, would shift hundreds of billions in health care expenses to states and families and create bureaucratic hurdles that will push the most vulnerable individuals off the rolls. Cleverly, they write, the bill does not mention cuts to Medicare. And this is important, so I'm not discussed enough. So pay attention. I'm glad that the National Catholic Reporter editorial group has noticed this. Pay attention. The bill cleverly does not mention cuts to Medicare because they would be automatic. In other words, they didn't need to mention them. They say that's because the bill would add an estimated $2.3 to $3.8 trillion to the deficit over 10 years. And under the pay-as-you-go law, that extra debt would automatically trigger reductions of up to 4% a year to programs such as Medicare. Not just Medicaid, but Medicare. They note that amounts to about $45 billion cut from Medicare in 2026 alone, and nearly $500 billion cut, half a trillion cut from Medicare through 2034.
Good Lord.
So the National Catholic Reporter's editorial board writes, the bill diverts funding from struggling families and environmental programs, cutting food assistance and Medicaid while decreasing clean energy tax credits just as climate-driven storms and wildfires become more intense. It then redirects that money into larger Pentagon and border security budgets. It is all disgraceful and shameful. We urge the Senate to heed the voices of millions who will lose vital assistance under its provisions. We call on senators to do their jobs, hold hearings, demand transparency, and amend or reject the provisions that substantially favor the wealthy few over the many. The promise of American democracy is not merely the freedom to accumulate wealth. It is the promise of mutual obligation, of building a society in which our fortunes rise or fall together. If we follow this one big shameful bill, if we allow it to become law, we condemn ourselves to a future where opportunity is bartered away and our social contract is ripped to shreds. They conclude this way. Jesus weeps over this cruelty. And so do we, they write. We must reject this heartless bargain and instead pursue policies that honor the dignity of every citizen and collective well-being of our nation. That from the editorial staff of the independent, 60-year-old, Kansas City-based National Catholic Reporter.
Wow, powerful.
Bless them. Now, do you think the so-called religious supporters in Congress on the right will take heed with Jesus weeping and all over this cruelty? Nah, I don't think so either. But we'll see. It would be nice, mighty nice of them, mighty Catholic of them, if they did. Wanted to share that with you because I think that's kind of extraordinary.
Yeah, for them to actually spell out in numerical terms the gigantic, massive, gargantuan wealth redistribution from the most vulnerable, poorest, low-income, working-class Americans, just shoveling all that money right up to the wealthy who don't need it.
All right, one more before we get to... we will watch. It'll be very interesting to see... what happens here, and if they pay attention? I guess if you're a believer in religious freedom, you get to follow the religions you want to and ignore the ones you don't, even if they're a religion you happen to follow. Isn't Vice President J.D. Vance? He's Catholic.
He's a converted Catholic, but he also, I think, pretty much is sure that he lacks any shame remaining. And that's one of the issues about the Republican Party is if they no longer have any shame, can you shame them by pointing out how unchristian they are actually in practice versus how much they profess to be?
And how much Jesus is weeping over their one big shameful bill.
And they know it. Anyway, I think they all know it.
We'll see what happens. It'll be very interesting.
It depends on
June
if they can
July.
Be pressured and pushed into not passing it.
As the Lincoln Project, top of the show, said, hey, call your senator. Let him know your opinion. Anyway, one more before we get to the Green News Report here. I told you it was going to take a month or so to catch up from our week off last week. Here's a story that broke late last week, late in the week, and I've been trying to get to all week. First, okay, you'll recall last month that the mayor of Newark, Roz Baraka, was arrested by federal goons outside of a private immigration detention facility that was contracted by ICE to hold migrants who were rounded up by the Trump administration. Well, the facility, according to Baraka and the city of Newark, the largest city in New Jersey, does not actually have the proper permits to hold people overnight as it is doing. But when the mayor went to the facility to inspect it and to serve them, to cite them, I believe, he was arrested instead by federal officials who swooped in, even as at the same time, three members of the U.S. Congress were also at the facility, three Democrats, to inspect it, as is their right under federal law. Well, a week or so later, charges against Mayor Baraka were in fact dropped because, yes, they were baseless. But a New Jersey member of Congress who was there that day, on the same day the charges dropped against Baraka, Congresswoman LaMonica McGivern of New Jersey was subsequently indicted for allegedly body slamming an ICE agent that day, according to folks who have reviewed the many videos of the incident, this charge is absolutely ridiculous. And it may well be dropped as well soon by the interim U.S. attorney in New Jersey, Alina Haba, who also happens to be one of Trump's former personal defense lawyers. This week, on Tuesday, Mayor Baraka, with the charges dropped, has now filed suit against Haba, charging that she had arrested him out of political spite, and he seeks damages for false arrest and malicious prosecution, as the Trump administration is trying to basically intimidate mayors and members of Congress and judges who they see as their political opposition. Well, a week or two before the Newark incident, you will also recall that a state judge in Wisconsin was arrested also by Trump's goons. And on that story, we have some news after she was not only arrested, but she was indicted a few days later for theoretically interfering in federal officials' attempts to arrest a migrant who was at her court for a completely different purpose. That Wisconsin judge subsequently sued to block the prosecution, charging that just like the Supreme Court decided last year for Donald Trump, she also has absolute immunity as a judge from federal prosecution for official acts she carries out over the course of her role as a judge. And she therefore cannot be tried on the issue at all, whether she's guilty of the charges or not. Don't matter. She can't even go to trial because of her absolute immunity. Well, on Friday, according to CBS News, a bipartisan group of more than 130 retired judges filed a brief in her case, urging a federal court to drop the charges against Wisconsin Judge Hannah Dugan, saying that her arrest undermines, quote, centuries of precedent on judicial immunity. Dugan, a Milwaukee County Circuit Court judge, was arrested April 25 by FBI agents on federal allegations that she prevented the arrest of a man by immigration authorities during a federal law enforcement operation at her courthouse. Though, if she prevented that man's arrest, she certainly wasn't very good at it, because the guy actually rode down in an elevator at the courthouse with one of the federal officials there to arrest him. And then he was arrested just a few minutes later. The man, Eduardo Flores Ruiz, was arrested. He has since been detained at an immigration detention center. In an amicus brief filed on Friday, this group of judges argues that Dugan should not be prosecuted at all because, quote, she is entitled to absolute immunity for her official acts. Quote, this bar on prosecution is the same absolute immunity that is given to members of the legislative and executive branches for their actions taken in an official capacity, the brief reads, echoing Dugan's argument that specifically cited Trump v. United States, the case that last July resulted in the corrupted U.S. Supreme Court declaring that presidents have absolute criminal immunity for their official acts. The group of 138 former state and federal judges called the prosecution of Dugan, who was indicted last month on one count each of concealing an individual to prevent arrest and obstruction. They called it, quote, egregious overreach by the executive branch that threatens public trust in the judicial system and the ability of the public to avail themselves of courthouses without fear of reprisal. Yes, you should be able to go to a courthouse without fearing you will be arrested on something entirely different. They write, quote, allowing prosecution of Judge Dugan for the alleged actions would create a chilling effect on judges.
That's the point.
Yep, that would stifle independent decision making and cast doubt on the universal recognition that judges are in charge of maintaining order and decorum in their courtrooms and courthouses, according to the group of judges. And I'm sure that, yeah, that's exactly the point. That's exactly what the authoritarian Trump administration is hoping to do. They're hoping to chill judges from what they do and don't do. The judges also argued that prosecuting Dugan threatens to undermine centuries of precedent on judicial immunity, crucial for an effective judiciary. She was released, Dugan was, from custody following her arrest. She has pleaded not guilty. A federal judge set her trial to begin the week of July 21. She has served as a judge in Milwaukee County Circuit Court since 2016. She was elected with about 65% of the vote. She was reelected in 2022. And whether she has to go to trial at all, much less the results of that trial, well, that will be a landmark in this authoritarian Trump era, I suspect. So we will, of course, continue to follow that story. Quick break, and we're back with Desi Doyen and the Green News Report. Right after this, I'm Brad Friedman. Don't touch that dial. Hey, this is Brad. Please consider supporting whichever progressive media outlet is serving you. Most, just like us, do not receive corporate or political support. We all need your support to counter the powerful corporate media echo chamber. From Desi Doyen and myself, thank you.
You're listening to an encore presentation of The Bradcast.
All right. You ready?
Yes. Fun stories ahead.
Oh, they are. You know, don't belittle your own stories. You always yell at me for doing that to you. So, no, I think it will be very good. Here we go. It's our latest Green News Report.
There's also a chance, because of some of these cuts, that NOAA Hurricane Hunter aircraft will not be able to fly this year, and with less reconnaissance missions, we may be flying blind.
Weather Service offices on the Gulf Coast are seriously understaffed, new documents reveal. U.S. Supreme Court further limits environmental reviews. Plus,
to eliminate FEMA would be a man-made disaster.
Sounding the alarm on Trump's dangerous gutting of FEMA.
All of those alarm bells and more straight ahead from BradBlog.com. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand by for 6 minutes of independent green news, politics, analysis, and snarky comment.
But it turns out not everyone at FEMA is as prepared as they should be.
FEMA staff were apparently caught off guard on Monday when the disaster agency's new acting leader told them that he was previously unaware that the U.S. had a hurricane season.
The head of FEMA? It's almost like Trump picks his cabinet the way you select a jury. Do you have any opinions on hurricanes? Have you ever heard of hurricanes? No? Great, you're hired.
This is your Green News Report. Okay, Desi Doyen. Ignore that whole FEMA story. Department of Homeland Security says that the head of FEMA was just kidding. He actually does know that there's a hurricane season, and it's totally a joke, and you shouldn't be concerned about it at all. Feel better?
No.
Oh, what do you got for us today?
Well, first, more than a dozen National Weather Service forecast offices along the hurricane-prone Gulf Coast are seriously understaffed, from Texas to Florida, including the National Hurricane Center, in advance of what is forecast to be an unusually active hurricane season.
Oh, I'm sure that's just a joke, too.
That's according to internal data reviewed by The Guardian. The documents contradict the Trump administration's assertions that key offices are fully staffed. NBC 6 Miami's veteran Florida forecaster John Morales sounded the alarm this week, bluntly informing the public of the impacts of the Trump administration's massive budget cuts, layoffs, and hiring freezes at federal science and weather agencies.
What we're starting to see is that the quality of the forecasts is becoming degraded.
Long term, Morales warned of the systematic destruction of America's science and technological leadership.
Because of the cuts, the gutting, the sledgehammer attack on science in general, and this is a multi-generational impact on science in this country.
States are also facing deep uncertainty about the Trump administration's ability and willingness to fully respond to disasters this year after major cuts to FEMA and even deeper cuts proposed by congressional Republicans in their budget bill to pay for tax cuts for the wealthy. On The Late Show with Stephen Colbert, North Carolina's Democratic Governor Josh Stein, whose state is struggling to recover from Hurricane Helene's $60 billion in damage last year, also sounded the alarm about Donald Trump's plan to eliminate FEMA and force states to shoulder the burden of disasters.
If a state has to create afresh an entire emergency response, it is not going to work. What we know is that there will be a natural disaster in the United States somewhere this year. That's why we have the federal expertise and we need the federal resources, because the scale of these storms are so massive. To eliminate FEMA would be a man-made disaster when we need FEMA to respond to natural disasters.
And that's the governor from hurricane-prone North Carolina. Is he worried? Yeah, he's worried. He should be worried.
In other news, the Trump Interior Department announced this week that it plans to reopen 11 million acres of pristine public lands in Alaska to new oil and gas drilling.
Fantastic.
Reversing President Biden's ban on development and removing protections for sensitive ecological areas in Alaska's North Slope, containing some of the last remaining wilderness in the country.
Well, that's what we voted for, isn't it?
Finally, in a little notice ruling last week, the U.S. Supreme Court further limited environmental review of major projects, allowing federal agencies to limit the scope of their reviews of the environmental impacts of projects they regulate. In a case involving a proposed railway that would increase exports of oil extracted in Utah, the court allowed agencies to limit the harms they consider to direct environmental impacts of a project, not larger impacts like climate change. Mm. Now, last year, the Supreme Court overturned a long-standing precedent known as the Chevron deference that directed lower courts to defer to agency expertise in implementing federal laws. But in this ruling, Justice Brett Kavanaugh wrote that courts should defer to agencies, at least when it comes to a fossil fuel project.
Well, that's part of the corrupted Supreme Court's legal doctrine of make it up as you go along.
Yeah.
For much more on all of these stories and the ones we couldn't get to today, check out our website at greennews.bradblog.com. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your Green News Report. They are done dirt cheap at
yes.
the, at least for what they get out of it at the Supreme Court. By the way, our dirty deeds are, well, they're cheap, but they're not free. We could use your support. Please consider hitting a donate button if you stop by bradblog.com, where there is no paywall. If you missed any portion of today's show or you would like to listen again, share it with someone you know, love, or hate, we really could use your support. For some reason, the fossil fuel industry is just not coughing up the dough.
Can't imagine why.
To keep the broadcast Green News Report on the air. Thank you very much, our producer, Desi Doyen.
Yep.
You can find her on the social medias.
At Green News Report.
And you can find me there as well at The Brad Blog. Also, I am available via email if you like. I am bradcast@bradblog.com. There you go. We'll see you at all of the above. Until we see you here next time, I'm Brad Friedman. Good luck, world.